Hello, 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 and welcome back to Logically in Love. This is Savannah Gamblin, your host, and you guys, please stop following my old Instagram account. It is painful. It is so painful. I keep going to I'm doing it to myself, but I keep looking at my old Instagram account, Savannah_Gamblin, and I'm watching the followers go up while my current Instagram account is just chilling. And I'm like, okay, it's fine. It's not a big deal. But just as a reminder, if you guys are trying to follow me, I feel really bad because you guys think you're following me and that's not where I'm posting. I can't get onto that account anymore. So my current Instagram is Gamblin Savannah, all one word. It's Gamblin, just like gambling without the G, and Savannah with two N's, okay? So if you're trying to follow me, I'm so sorry. I can't get on my old account anymore. So go follow that one. But now that that is out of the way, you guys, this is the last episode of the 9-month rule series, which is kind of exciting. So I think this is the fifth episode. Yeah, this is going to be the fifth episode. So yeah, I've only been doing this for a month, and the amount of DMs that I'm getting with just so many questions on Instagram and on TikTok, it's almost overwhelming, but in an exciting way. I don't want that to sound negative because it's not. I'm so grateful and I love seeing your guys' questions, but it's starting to make me wonder if I should have an Ask Sav episode or something like that, or maybe do a little segment, because I've been getting a lot of questions that are really good. They're really great questions, and I feel bad that I'm not responding to all of them, so I'm gonna have to figure something out. So if you guys want me to do kind of an Ask Sav segment in my episodes, I'd be more than happy to do that. But yeah, I'll probably do a poll or something on my Instagram story just to get some feedback. But today is going to be the last episode of the 9-month rule, which is going to be the third reason why I feel you would be stuck in the realization stage. So we already talked about reason number one, which is you could be afraid to be alone. Reason number two, that one is going to be maybe you just don't have a good foundation of communication, right? And so today's third reason is going to be your relationship is healthy, except ... So what I mean by that, let me give an example because I actually went through this. I had an ex where our relationship was very, very healthy, right? We had beautiful communication skills. We had so much respect for each other when we got into fights. And I trusted him completely. And I believe that he trusted me completely too. However, there was one area where we just were not on the same terms, and it was with boundaries, what we expected from one another. I'm somebody who has a lot of guy friends. I had social anxiety, crippling social anxiety growing up, and so talking to girls was way too intimidating. So the majority of my friends growing up were guys. Now that I'm an adult, that still carries with me. I have a lot of guy friends. He was not comfortable with that. The thing is, I'm not going to get rid of my friends for a relationship. So that was something that we butt heads on a lot. And eventually, the relationship just didn't work. So that would be an example of a really healthy relationship, except there's one area you guys need to work on. So instead of having an episode where I just go through each problem that your relationship could possibly be having, there's a list of infinite amounts of problems that people could have. So I just feel like that's not realistic and practical and kind of a waste of everyone's time. So I'm going to take this in the direction of what does a healthy relationship even look like, right? And what do I feel are the main marks that you want to hit to ensure that you have a good, healthy foundation? And most of the problems are going to fall under these categories. So I came up with four main points that I think every relationship should try to hit. It's going to be communication, boundaries, trust, and fair fighting, okay? What I mean by this, let's say you in your relationship, your issue is that your partner, he acts like he doesn't care, he doesn't show any emotion. Okay, well, that would be an issue that falls under the communication category. Or let's say somebody has trust issues and they're super jealous all the time. Great, that's going to fall under the trust category. So I wanted to have big umbrella categories that can kind of cover the majority of issues that could be going on in your guys' situation, and hopefully they resonate with you. All right, so let's jump into the first one, communication. So last week's episode, we covered a lot of this, but just as a recap, we talked about attachment styles and love languages. The love languages are going to be gifts, words of affirmations, acts of service, quality time, and physical touch. I had somebody ask, well, Savannah, what if I have all five love languages? Like, what if all five are my love language? And to that, I kind of wanted to address, we all love all five. Like, I don't think there's a person who hates one of those, right? It's just the fact that you have a primary love language. And our primary love language is our preferred way of receiving love. That's how we feel the most appreciated and the most heard in our relationship. So me personally, mine is quality time. I need quality time. If I don't get enough of that, then I start to think that my partner doesn't care about me or that they don't like spending time with me. And I start feeling really bad and not loved or appreciated. So that's an example of what a love language would look like. So with that, I had a lot of people asking me like, well, how do I figure out which one is mine? I am going to include a link to this quiz. It's okay. So Dr. Chapman is who came up with the five love languages. And so he actually has his own website where he promotes his book that he wrote about it. But he also has a quiz. And the quiz kind of just asks you a series of questions of what's the most important to you. And then it shows you your percentage of which love languages are more dominant for you. So I'm going to include a link to that quiz in the show notes. So just keep an eye out for that. It'll take like 3 to 5 minutes of your day. And trust me, it's totally worth it. I love doing it. I love having my friends do it because love languages aren't just for intimate relationships. They're for friendships too. So I think it's a fun quiz. I'm such a quiz person. But another main point that I want to point out when it comes to communication, I think it's really important that you don't feel stressed or anxiety around being able to talk to your partner about things bothering you, right? Now, there's a thing I like to call silent annoyances, all right? There's a difference between issues in the relationship and silent annoyances, all right? If you don't know what I mean, here's an example. Let's say my partner always leaves the cabinet doors open, right? Is that detrimental to our relationship? Is them leaving the cabinet doors open the reason we're gonna break up? If the answer's no, then that is a silent annoyance. If it's yes, then that is an issue in the relationship. How I like to go about each, if it's an issue, then you need to discuss it with them. If it's a silent annoyance, then that's just you having a pet peeve and that's something that they do that bothers you. And guess what? That is life, baby. You are going to have pet peeves with your partner. They're going to do shit that annoys the crap out of you, but you have to just choose to love them and ignore it. So an issue would be something like, you do all the work around the house, right? Like, let's say they never help around the house and it's only ever you. That is an issue because that is not distribution of labor, right? That's just you doing all the work and them just sitting on their ass doing whatever it is that they do. So that's an issue where you would talk to them about it. My rule of thumb is a silent annoyance doesn't become an issue until it's happened at least 3 or 4 times where it's really pissed you off, and then it's worth bringing up to them. Because if you just bring up every little silent annoyance to them, it's like nitpicking. You're just nagging them about every little thing. Like, ugh, you left the cabinet door open, or you forgot to put the cap on the toothpaste bottle. Like, try to not complain to complain, really. I mean, it's not that deep. Those aren't problems. Those are just like, they bug you, okay? I'm sure there's things that you do that bug them too, but you don't hear them nagging you all day long about every little thing you do. So I do kind of want to point that out. Now, if there is an issue or there is something going on in the relationship, you should be able to tell them that in a clear and direct way. I fucking hate when women say, well, if he loved me, he'd know. Or, I shouldn't have to ask this of him. Okay, well, he shouldn't have to read your mind. So, there's that. He should not have to just look at you and know what you want. That's not fair at all. So, we're grown. We're grown-ass women. We're not going to play the guessing game. So, clear and direct way, I think the best way to do it is what I was talking about in the last episode. You want to state a fact, a belief, a feel, and an action, okay? So let's give an example on what this would look like, right? Let's say your partner, he is playing video games all the time around the house, right? Instead of helping you out with laundry or dishes or anything, he's just playing video games. And that's really bothering you because it's making you feel like you're doing all the work. So what you're going to do is you're going to go up to your partner and you're going to state fact, belief, feeling, action, okay? So here's what that looks like. Hey, here's the fact part. Hey, I've noticed that you have been playing video games a whole awful lot lately and the laundry has still not been done. Belief. I believe that's because you enjoy playing video games and it allows you to de-stress and hang out with your friends. Then you go into feeling. But that makes me feel like you expect me to do all the chores around the house instead of helping out. And it makes me feel like I'm doing all the work and you don't care to help me. Action. What I'd like from you is to at least do the laundry and help me with dinner tonight. See? Easy. Boom. You're telling him exactly what you'd like from him, and you're telling him exactly how it makes you feel when he's not doing that. Okay? Men are very much... Okay, here's just a tip. This is a side note. I do kind of want to mention this. Men don't work the same as women do, like thought process-wise. If you want a man to do something, don't just say... take out the trash. Can you please take out the trash? Because then in their brain, that's not important to them and they're probably going to forget. So if you really want your man to hear you and understand you and do what you're asking of him, respectfully tell him, hey, can you please take out the trash for us? That way I don't have to go out in the dark to the dumpster and throw the trash out. It makes me scared. Okay. That would be something where, okay, now he's hearing how him taking out the trash is no longer a chore. It's a service that he's doing for you to make you feel better, right? You're telling him, if you take out the trash, that'll help me not have to feel scared. Or that'll make me feel like I don't have to go out in the dark by myself, you know? Or let's say you want him to go out with you and your friends. Or you want him to go... over to your parents' house with you, right? You would say, instead of just, hey, can you come to my parents with me? Or, hey, I'd like you to come to my parents with me. Hey, I'm going to go visit my parents this evening. I'd really like it if you came with. I think it shows them a lot of respect when you pop in once in a while. That is giving them why you want them to do what you want them to do, right? Instead of you just telling them what to do and then they feel pussy whipped and they just do it, you know? Like, give them reasons, seriously. So that's just a side note that, I mean, yeah, that falls under communication, but I just kind of wanted to put that out there because I feel like a lot of women, they're like, ugh, he never does anything I ask. Well, are you asking or are you nagging? I'll just leave that there. Moving on to the second category, boundaries. Okay, if you have good communication skills, you should be able to clearly communicate boundaries. You should have physical boundaries, emotional boundaries, and social boundaries, okay? Physical boundaries. How many times do you guys want to see each other a week? You know, or maybe you live together, so how many times do you want to not see each other? Like, do you guys have designated nights where he goes out with the boys and you go out with the girls? Or... what are you comfortable doing in the bedroom and not doing in the bedroom? You know, you need to discuss these kind of boundaries. Same with emotional. if somebody gets super, super mad and their boundary is, hey, I need to be able to walk away and take a breather, you should be able to respect that. And you guys need to discuss those kind of boundaries. Or maybe you had a really verbally abusive relationship in the past, and so there's certain phrases that just trigger you. You would want to discuss that with your partner and let them know, hey, like, when you say these certain things, it triggers me to my past traumas. And so I would really appreciate you not saying those type of things, you know? That would be a boundary. Social boundaries. This one's very important to me. I refuse. I will not have a scene in front of people. I will not bicker with my partner in front of people. I will not fight with you. And if we are going to fight, like let's say it's a serious pressing issue and they need to discuss it with me right then and there, great. Be like, hey, you want to come with me to go pick up something from the gas station? And then we quote unquote go to the gas station, but really we're discussing it in the car. No one needs to know that we're having problems. So my social boundary is I'm not going to fight in front of people. Another social boundary that I have, we don't need to talk about our sex life in front of people. That's like, we don't need that in our life. So those would be examples of social boundaries. When you are setting these boundaries, though, it's very important to hold empathy throughout the entire conversation, because just because something might not seem like a big deal to you doesn't mean it's not a big deal to them. And sometimes things are gonna seem ridiculous, but you kind of have to take yourself out of your little world for a second and put yourself in their shoes and understand, okay, where might they be coming from? Because even if you don't agree with their boundaries, like let's say, a sexual boundary. Let's talk about that one, like with physical. Let's say they want to do something in the bedroom and you're just like not comfortable with it. Maybe you could discuss with them like, hey, here's why I'm not comfortable with it. Maybe we could work up to that by doing blank. That's a sign of empathy because you're understanding where they're coming from and you want to make them happy, but you're just not there yet. Or another way to show empathy, let's talk about like the emotional boundaries. So they have a trigger word or phrase, right? And maybe to you think it's really stupid, right? You're like, what the fuck? Like, why is that making you upset? But you still need to have empathy so you can tell them, okay, when I say that, I don't mean it in this way. Or when I say that, I don't mean that in a way to come at you sideways or anything like that. But okay, I will try to do better, or I will try to work on that. If it's something that's a boundary difficult for you to meet in the middle with, at least acknowledge that you're willing to try, because then that still makes them feel heard and validated. Now, sometimes boundaries aren't always going to mesh well. Here's an example. So, like I was saying, I had a relationship where our boundaries just, they did not match. I was more than okay with him hanging out with girls, and I wanted a boyfriend that was more than okay with me hanging out with guys, and he just wasn't. And so, sometimes you can meet in the middle, and I tried that, but it just wasn't working and it wasn't making me happy, and therefore our boundaries weren't compatible. He wanted me to no longer hang out with guy friends, and I didn't want to give that up, and that was his boundary, and so we had a split. If you have clear set boundaries, which I did kind of forget to mention this, boundaries also includes cheating. What you guys consider cheating, you definitely should like talk about that. I think that's very important for relationships to discuss from the get-go. Sometimes boundaries can be a make or break, you know, and that's okay. Not every relationship is meant to be saved. Moving on to trust. So with trust, I made a TikTok, and some people got kind of butthurt about it, and I'm not going to step down. I'm going to follow through with my statement because I didn't say it to be funny. I said it because it's how I feel. I don't believe in jealousy. I don't. I just don't. And here's why. Jealousy to me is just a fancy word for insecurity, right? It's just another way of you showing that you're insecure. Now, Savannah, what if he cheated on me? Okay, Let's go off of that. Let's say your boyfriend cheated on you, okay? And now you guys are out having fun, you're at a party, and he's talking to a girl. And that makes you feel, quote unquote, jealous. Is that making you feel jealous, where you want the attention that she's getting? Or is it making you feel nervous that he might want her, or that he might find her attractive, or that he might be enjoying that conversation more than he enjoys talking to you? I'm going to assume the reason you're bothered by him talking to that girl isn't because you're jealous, it's because it's making you feel nervous and insecure, right? Same with if your boyfriend is following all these hot girls on Instagram. That doesn't make you feel jealous. That makes you feel insecure because it makes you feel shitty because you're wondering, well, what if he finds them more attractive? Or why is he following them? Shouldn't he only want to look at me? First of all, no. Men and women, we like to look at pretty things, whether it's people, clothes, jewelry, cars. We like to look at nice things. There's nothing wrong with that. So if you're threatened because your boyfriend's looking at other women, it's not because you're jealous, it's because you're insecure and you're afraid that he might find them more attractive. And you know what I say when I feel insecure? I just go up to my partner and say, hey, this is making me feel really insecure. I have no problem letting my partner know when I'm insecure. I will tell them every single time, hey, I feel insecure. And then they're going to say, oh, why? Then I say, well, that girl's really pretty and it makes me wonder if you think she's prettier than me. And then they're going to give you that verbal affirmations and they're going to validate you and all that. And then problem solved, you know? So if you're feeling quote unquote jealous, you're actually feeling insecure, and I think the best way to handle that is by addressing it. Don't worry about looking crazy. I mean, we're all a little crazy in our own different ways, you know? What makes you crazy is when you bottle your shit up and then get mad at him for something that's not even worth getting mad at because you just need something to take all your frustration out on. That shit's crazy. But you addressing things head on site, that's not crazy. That's just mature, and that's you understanding that there's something bothering you and you want to get over it as soon as possible. That's how I see that. I also wanted to bring up the conversation of paranoia versus trusting, like not trustworthy, okay? Sometimes people, okay, I hate when people walk around and they're like, I have trust issues. Bitch, it's not a fucking badge, okay? It is not a badge of honor. Trust issues isn't cute. That's some mental shit that you gotta figure out. Don't walk around like it's something like to brag about, okay? I definitely feel for you though. If you have trust issues, that's really sad because that's not a fun way to live. That's gotta be really mentally challenging. So I wanted to talk about this though because sometimes you enter, women or men, we enter relationships with past trauma relationships, right? And we carry that trauma with us into our new one. And so now, for no reason whatsoever, we start not trusting our new partner when they didn't even do anything wrong. It was our ex that did something wrong. So that's not really fair to our current partner. So you gotta ask yourself sometimes, when you're accusing your partner of things, or you're wondering if they're up to something, or, you know, all that shenanigans, ask yourself, do I actually not trust this person, or am I paranoid to let history repeat itself? Because then that means it has nothing to do with your partner. That has everything to do with you needing to work through your past traumas and needing to either do some therapy or some self-development work. And honestly, I think you should open up to your partner about that and be like, hey, I'm really sorry that it's been seeming like I don't trust you lately. You've done nothing to deserve that, and it's not your fault. It's just my ex really did a number on me, and now it's carrying into this relationship, and I'm going to work on getting that solved. And more often than not, your partner's going to want to help you through that because they probably have gone through the same thing. I definitely have. I've been cheated on left and right. I was cheated on and I stayed, bitch. Like, okay. So trust me, I totally get where you're coming from if you're carrying your past traumas with you, but it's definitely not something you want to make a habit. You'd want to get that solved. Now, if your current partner did cheat on you, or they did lie to you, or they did do something to break your trust, and now you no longer trust them, and you're like, no, I'm not paranoid, I genuinely just don't trust my partner, is this relationship worth saving? Do you want to work really hard on your end? Because when you, if you get cheated on and you decide to stay, that means you're deciding to, as a team and as a relationship, work on rebuilding that. It's not you sitting there on a pedestal and making your partner kiss your feet and work super hard to gain your trust back. That's not what that looks like. What it looks like is you having to do a lot of self-work and building your confidence and your insecurities back up, and also building a lot more communication, because that's most of the time where cheating comes from. So if you decide to stay, you have to understand that you have to put in work too. What I hate seeing is when women get cheated on, or men, and then they stay in that relationship and all they do is hold a grudge and remind their partner of what they did wrong. They were there. They know what they did is wrong, okay? So you can't stay in a relationship and just consistently hold a grudge and expect them to make it up to you. That's not how that happens. If you don't think that you're able to move on and forgive them and allow them to make it up to you and allow them to show you that it was just a mistake and that's all it was, which personally I don't think that's all cheating is, but besides the point, if you don't think you can do that, then you should leave. Because not, like I said, not all relationships are worth saving. So we talked about having clear communication. And with that, that means you're probably going to have clear boundaries. With clear boundaries, hopefully means that you have a good level of trust in each other. And so that leaves us just with the last main point, fair fights. This is a situation, this is a category that I personally resonate with more than the rest. So Dr. John Gottin, my little Midwestern accent coming through, but Dr. John Gottin, he has this theory. I'm just going to say the name of it. I cannot make this shit up. He calls it the force. He calls it the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And that is a scientific psychology term. That is real. I cannot make this shit up. And not only is it real, it has a 90% accuracy rate. Okay, so what is it? There are four horsemen, he calls, basically, that are fatal to every relationship. What the four are is criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling. And it's a 90% accuracy that if these four things are not removed from your relationship, that relationship will fail every single time. So, and he did studies on divorce marriages and couples that break up. And so it has a lot of science behind it and research. So let's just get right into them. So criticism. I think we all know what criticism is, but let's just make sure that it's clarified. This is when you are targeting either a trait or a behavior of your partner in a negative way, right? So you telling them, oh my God, you're so forgetful, or you're so selfish, or all you ever care about is you and your video games. You don't even give a fuck about me, or you're just so selfish, blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's criticism. What I encourage you to do is if your partner's doing something that you immediately want to criticize, instead of criticizing, give them an I statement. So, for example, a big pet peeve of mine, I hate when people know that I'm coming over and they don't unlock their door. So then I'm just standing on their porch with my dick in my fucking hand, just like blinking around waiting for them to come open the door. And it's so awkward. It's so embarrassing. Huge pet peeve of mine. So instead of if my friend or my partner forgets to unlock the door for me when I'm coming over to like get in the house, instead of me being like, oh my God, you're so forgetful, or what the fuck, are you dumb? Like, you know, coming at them personally, I would just say, I would just use an I statement and say, hey, I feel really awkward and uncomfortable when you don't unlock the door for me when I'm coming over. I would really appreciate it if you did that when you know that I'm on my way. Or I can give you a 5-minute heads up before I show up so that you can remember to unlock the door. That way you're still able to give a complaint, but you're not doing it in such an aggressive targeting way, right? So if there's criticism in your relationship, eventually, if you just keep doing that over and over again, they're going to resent you and they're just going to ignore everything you have to say. And we don't want that. The second one is contempt. I actually did not know what this word meant. So I had to look it up. But contempt is basically when somebody assumes a position of superiority in the conversation. So they act above the fight, or your partner comes to you with an issue and you act like, oh, I'm too good to pay attention to that. Or, oh my God, that's not even worth my time to like even kind of consider. That is contempt. So examples is sarcasm, name calling, mockery, eye rolling, ladies, eye rolling is contempt. Or any form of disrespect, that's contempt. It's not okay to make your partner feel inferior in any situation, but especially if they're coming to you with a communication problem, like they're trying to communicate with you what their issue is, and you just backhand them with contempt, that's not okay. Under no circumstances whatsoever, I don't care how pissed off you are, I don't care what they did to you, you should never ever disrespect your partner, because then if you do, you are no better than them. You just brought yourself back down to their level. You are not superior anymore if you're going to give contempt. You're actually probably below them now, because now you're just being a child and making fun of them, right? So no more contempt. We're done with that. Instead, if you don't have anything nice to say, ladies and gentlemen, don't say anything at all, right? Going back to kindergarten carries into the adulthood. Great. Moving on. Defensiveness. I hate defensiveness. This is the worst. Oh my God, I hate it. And you know what? I hate it and I do it sometimes. I'm definitely guilty of this. But I cannot stand when I come to somebody and say, hey, you did this wrong. And they're like, no, I didn't. And oh my God, well, I wouldn't have done that if you didn't blah, blah. Oh my God, grow up. No. Okay. But it happens, and the reason it happens is actually, it's kind of sad. Typically, the reason why people are defensive is because of their childhood. When they were kids and they did something wrong, they were severely punished, or they would get scolded really bad, or they felt they were made to feel very stupid or, I don't know, irresponsible. So now in their adulthood, if it's brought to their attention that they did something wrong, the little kid in them comes out and they immediately have to justify that, no, I didn't do that wrong, please don't punish me, or no, I didn't do that wrong, that wasn't me, that could have been you. So then the blame's not on them and they don't feel threatened of taking responsibility for something they did wrong that could result in them getting punished, right? So the best way to handle somebody who's being defensive isn't to just get mad at them and start saying, oh my God, like you're not taking responsibility, blah, blah, blah. Just be very calm and act like it's nonchalant, and also call them out for being defensive. Oftentimes, if you let them know, like, hey, you're being really defensive right now, it clicks with them a little bit. They're gonna still be defensive, but it registers with them that, oh shit. And then what I suggest you do is admit your side of the problem. Like, what did you do to contribute to the issue? Because we're not here to finger point. I can almost guarantee that anytime something went wrong, like let's say that you guys had a date night set up and they forgot about it, and so you bring it to their attention and they start getting really defensive, you would acknowledge, hey, you're being really defensive right now. And then you would go into admitting your side. Obviously, in this situation, I mean, they forgot point blank. But you could even say something like, maybe it would help next time if I reminded you that morning. Or maybe it would help if I called you an hour before our date night or something like that, assume a little bit of blame. Because if you only point your fingers at them and put everything on them, there's no response other than defensiveness you're gonna get out of them. So when you assume a little bit of blame, it shows them, hey, it's okay, I did something wrong too, or hey, there's something that I could have done different too. And that allows them to feel more comfortable and understand, oh, it's a safe place to admit what we did wrong, and we're not gonna get scolded or punished for it, right? So that's the best way to go about defensiveness. The fourth one is stonewalling. This is when I actually do this a lot. Well, not a lot, but if I'm feeling really overwhelmed in a conversation or extremely frustrated to the point where I just don't feel like I can even continue the conversation with the person I'm talking to, I just say, whatever. I'm a whatever queen. I will just say whatever and move on. But that's stonewalling, and that's not healthy behavior. So if you two are in a fight and one of them, well, let me give you a couple examples. So you two are in a fight and your partner just shuts down completely. That's stonewalling. The silent treatment, that is stonewalling. Refusing to talk about something, that is stonewalling. Anytime you basically are blocking yourself off, that is stonewalling, and it's not healthy because then it's just sweeping shit under the rug and resentment gets built up that way. So the best way to handle this if your partner's stonewalling is to address it and say, hey, we can always come back to this at a time you're ready to talk. That way it gives them a chance to take a breather and understand what they want out of the conversation. Or you could say something along the lines of, is there something that I'm doing that's causing you to shut down? Because maybe it's you that's making them stonewall. Like, it's not their pattern. It's that maybe you just keep making them feel invalidated, or you keep interrupting them, and so now they're just stonewalling you. You could maybe be the reason why they're stonewalling. So it helps to ask, like, is there a reason why you're shutting down? Am I contributing to this? And then it allows them to open communicate, and there's a new problem that's getting solved. Two birds, one stone, right? I want to emphasize, though, when it comes to fair fighting, because all four of these things, criticism, contempt, defensiveness, and stonewalling, all of these contribute to unfair fights. If you fix them, great, now you're fighting fair and in a respectful, healthy way. But sometimes, even if you're doing all the right things, you guys just still are butting heads and you can't come to terms. That's where it's safe to say, agree to disagree, right? It's okay to disagree. It's okay to not always be on the same page. I mean, you're not the same person, and that's why you love each other, because you're individual people. So you don't have to force an agreeance. The stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life, and I don't care who this pisses off, don't go to bed angry is the stupidest piece of advice I've ever heard in my life, and it genuinely serves no purpose. What I mean when I say this is, like, why? Why can't you go to bed angry? I go to bed angry. It is the healthiest thing for me to do, actually, if I go to bed angry. If we're in a bad fight and I'm tired and it's been a long day and we're just feeding into each other's anger, why wouldn't I sleep on that? And then pick it back up the next day in a calmer, healthier way. I've had the chance to think about what I'm actually mad about and think about what I want to say. I have time to breathe and have space and cool down. Like, why wouldn't I go to bed angry? But I think, and one of my friends, they brought it to my attention, well, I think the reason people say that is because then they wake up and they're just like, whatever, it's not worth it. And then they move on with their lives. Well, what that ends up doing is building resentment, right? Because now you're not talking about the problems that bother you. You're just moving on from them. So I really advise you guys, sometimes the best thing to do when you're in a really bad fight is to say, hey, I think we should put this down for today, separate and, like, have space and time to think, and then come back tomorrow. Always make sure you come back to it. Never go to bed angry and then just move on, because then, yes, resentment's gonna build. But come back the next morning and bring up, the reason I was angry is because of this, and try to do it in a much calmer manner. I really want to give you guys a piece of advice before we finish this episode, because it's kind of getting a little long. You should never be fighting to be right. You fight for a solution. You do not fight to be right, okay? Because you two are a team. And if you guys are trying to have a point system and somebody needs to be in the wrong and somebody needs to be in the right with every disagreement, that is just competition, right? And then it's like frenemies, you know, just you hang out with each other and love each other, but you're always in competition with one another. Same situation. So you should never fight to be right, because who cares who's right or who's wrong? If feelings are hurt, all you want out of that is to make sure your partner is happy and that they're heard and that both of you have a sense of agreement towards the end, right? So I always, when I go into arguments, sometimes my ego gets the best of me, so I have to remind myself, hey, I'm in this fight to find a solution or a middle ground or a compromise, right? So just keep that in mind next time you get in your argument. That really helps the toxic behaviors kind of mute down a little bit when you're no longer trying to win the scoreboard. But that's everything I have for you guys today. I am so happy with all the people that have been coming in and really paying attention to the 9-month rule. If you don't know all the previous stuff that I've been talking about, go back and listen from the 9-month rule. And then there's 2 more episodes before this one that all kind of go together in this series. But I'm really excited because now we're going to start talking about new things. I don't know what next week is going to be about specifically. I have a couple ideas, but I think I'm going to do a poll on Instagram and see what you guys want to hear first. And I'm definitely going to have to start doing some Q&A or an Ask Sav segment in each episode, because I'm just getting way too many questions to just keep ignoring. But thank you so much. I post every single Monday, so I will see you guys next week. I hope you have a great rest of your day. Make sure to follow me on my new Instagram account, which is Gamblin' Savannah. Gambling without the G, Savannah with 2 N's. And yeah, I love the support. Keep it up, guys, and stay logically in love. Bye.